So Srimad Bhagavatam continues step by step, verse by verse, chapter by chapter, canto by canto, and on this canto it is described as the science of God, illuminating what is the transcendental situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because if we want to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is not possible to understand him without understanding the relationship of the Supreme Lord with his different energies. So when we say his different energies, they are the energies that are coming from himself, his own energies. They're manifesting from his own personality, his own transcendental form. Therefore, they belong to him. So, the question that is being raised is a very intelligent question, and we see that if you want to get the best answers, you have to give the best questions. You have to offer the best questions. And so Srimad Bhagavatam is very good. When we do the class, if you like, we try to give some discourse and have some discussion on the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the end, we ask for questions, because the questions may further elucidate and illuminate the subject matter. But Srimad Bhagavatam itself is based on the most brilliant questions with the most intelligent devotees involved in the question and answering session. And so therefore, when those questions are being asked, they're being asked with a view to really getting to the grips with the most important topics. Not that our questions may not be equally brilliant and beneficial, but we're seeing that these wonderful personalities who historically and transcendentally are situated in devotional service factually to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in pure devotional service, they are asking and getting the answers to the most significant questions in life. I recall one time here in Bhaktivedanta Manor when Srila Prabhupada was here that sometimes, not very often, but sometimes at the end of class there would be some questions. Prabhupada, of course, sitting on his Vyasasan, he was explaining everything very, very wonderfully. And sometimes we would ask questions, but sometimes our questions would not be so first class. You may know of one lady who was here, and after Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam class, she asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, does Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita on the hellish planets also? So it was clear that the question was not the best question. Because if you see the answer that Prabhupada gave, which was very illuminating, then it becomes very nice to understand that Prabhupada, he was interested in giving the best knowledge. Prabhupada's answer, he said, this is not hell. The sun never shines. It's always raining. How much more hellish you want? That was Prabhupada's answer. So, actually, the Bhagavatam, that was of course a very short question and answer session. End of story. And that devotee still remembers today how that was a pretty seriously difficult situation, and she felt suitably chastened and some recognition that yes, maybe my intelligence was not so bright. But Parikshit Maharaj, his intelligence is extremely bright, and he's asking really important questions, And the questions that he asks and the answers that come through fill the volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, all 18,000 verses. And each verse is full of great transcendental significance. So they're really important questions. And sometimes the problem is, as we used to find also on morning walks with Prabhupada, although we would ask Prabhupada questions and he would kindly, generally answer the questions and give us some mercy, sometimes we didn't know what to ask Prabhupada. And we would have great difficulty with that. But still, the principle is that when we're beginning our spiritual life, we may not yet have our intelligence in full gear. And the whole process of spiritual life is to sharpen our intelligence, to purify our intelligence, to clear our consciousness so that we can actually ask the most significant things. Now we see this in the example of Sanatana Goswami also. Because Sanatana Goswami, when he was approaching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he did what is taken as the symbol of humility, sheer abject humility. He fell at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet with a straw between his teeth, indicating that I am actually bowing down underneath your feet and I'm submitting completely to you. And he requested Lord Chaitanya, because after all, this is the way Krishna says we have to approach a spiritual master, to try to approach a spiritual master and inquire very submissively. So inquiries should be there. And when we inquire, we should listen to the answers also. So that is submissive hearing, actually. Inquiry must be there. And he inquired because also submissive service should be offered to the spiritual master. In this way, one gets the mercy of the spiritual master. So Sanatana Goswami, he explained that, my dear Lord, I am so unfortunate that although people call me a very learned fellow, I may have studied many languages and many subject matters, but actually I'm so unfortunate that I don't know who I am or what I am. And I'm also so unfortunate that I don't even know what I should be asking. So please explain to me everything you think that I ought to know. So this is the mood in which one can successfully approach a spiritual master and progress in spiritual life. And in fact, not that one then becomes later a great pundit. No, actually one should always consider oneself a fool before one's spiritual master. That is required. Just like we sing in the morning, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Sarahari, that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind. Does that mean just in the beginning we become humble and later we can become very proud? Yes, I'm first class japa chanter or whatever it may be. No, always. Because Kirtaniya Sadahari, we want to be able to constantly chant the holy name. And in order to chant the holy name constantly, we have to be conscious that our position is very small, is very slight. And Bhagavatam is actually meant for receiving that transcendental knowledge. It is factually the incarnation of Krishna that we are fortunate enough to hold in our hands. And if we're fortunate enough to invite the Lord by means of that sound vibration into our hearts, then Krishna, he is very willing to manifest himself before us. Bhagavatam is described as our very means of conquest. The Srimad Bhagavatam, what is that? It is actually the sound incarnation of Krishna. That is Krishna appearing in our hearts. So therefore, It is very good when the devotees are eager and enthusiastic and awake and alive and ready to receive Krishna through the ear. This is a very simple process. And of all the 9 processes of devotional service, hearing is the easiest of all the processes. But even that we find difficult sometimes. So our situation is we find it difficult because we're not necessarily on the platform of realizing that transcendental knowledge. But the whole process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is to enable us to realize what is Krishna, to fully appreciate Krishna, and to develop love for Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would relish Srimad Bhagavatam. And the request of the sages assembled in the forest of Naimisharanya was also with great eagerness that they wanted to hear this message of Bhagavatam because it is so important. They also describe, the Bhagavatam describes the whole science of Krishna from the beginning to the end. Just as the sages are approaching Shonaka Rishi, he is approaching Suta Goswami, who was there at the original recitation of the Bhagavatam and who then described what he heard, what he'd understood. He described Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages in the forest at Naimisharanya later. And they describe this point. They say, because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed upon you all their favors. You have heard this subject matter of all the Vedic literatures. You're very expert in that subject matters because you've heard them, you've learned them, and you've also explained them. And because you're submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed upon you all their favors. So please, therefore, describe that subject matter which is for the absolute and ultimate good of all living beings. So Bhagavatam is meant for everyone. And we see that Prabhupada explains in his purport that Bhagavad Gita is meant not only for Arjuna, but for every living entity within the universe. And the proof is very simple to see, because it's not a matter of enmity. After all, Bhagavad Gita was spoken on a battlefield where there was enormous enmity. There were the branch of the family known as the Pandavas, and there was a other branch of the family known as the Kauravas. And they were about to kill each other. So there was serious enmity. You can't go into battle unless you're ready to kill or be killed. You may think, no one can kill me, but still, that is called a trial of arms. You put it to the test, who's going to kill who. So the enmity was there. But still, even in that situation, and especially in that situation, which was perfectly engineered by Lord Krishna, that is where Krishna chose to speak Bhagavad Gita, so that everyone, friends and enemies alike, could hear this subject matter. So we may find, in the course of our devotional service, that we make some friends in the course of our service, and hopefully not too many enemies along the way. Sometimes it can happen, but even when we have enemies in the course of our devotional service, then we should know that Krishna, he has no real enemy. At least people may be enemies towards him, but why should Krishna feel inimical towards anyone else? Krishna is equal to everyone. He's so equal to everyone that he spoke Bhagavad Gita for friends and enemies alike, that everyone could benefit from it. Everyone could hear. So, when there are children in the family, what is the father's position? Is he friends with one child and enemies with another child? Or is he naturally equal to all the children? We know from the biblical story of the prodigal's son that the child who left home and not the enemy of the father, but he decided he wanted to go, wanted to leave the family situation. Does that mean he became an enemy and that the father became angry with him? No. Rather, the father's thinking was concentrated especially on that unfortunate child, how to bring him back, always thinking how to bring him back home. So in this world, we've all become more or less inimical towards Krishna, forgetful of Krishna. And we see that in the modern day and age, that the mood is very much that what do we need God for? If there is some conception of God, and there is some conception of God, generally the conception of God that pervades the whole world at the moment, for those who admit that there may be some God, is one that, well, we're all one with God. We're equal with God. That actually, we're all God. That's a very seductive presentation put around and put about by a different class of atheist. Those who are against the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because, for example, if I say to you, if I don't like to accept your superior position, then I may say, well, you and I are equal. You know, why should I listen to what you have to say? You are equal with me. So that mentality, that puffed up mentality, is not very pleasing, actually. If you are in a superior position and someone is approaching you in a puffed up way and presenting themselves as being your equal or your better, that is quite distasteful, actually. And similarly, if we do it to others, it is also distasteful. So humility is required. Humility is essential in order to actually start and progress in our spiritual life, because we have to admit in spiritual life that we are very tiny. We're actually insignificant. I remember there was one wonderful devotee in Nairobi. Hasyananda was his name. He was an American devotee, very blissful devotee, actually. And he used to take great pleasure. Actually, Hasya Ras means laughing, smiling rasa, actually. So he used to come up to us during the day and he'd say, "Do you know who I am?" And we say, "Yeah, I think I know who you are, Prabhu." He said, "Who I am? I'm insignificant!" And he would burst into laughter. He was a very, very happy devotee. He was actually very happy because he was appreciating that my position is I'm insignificant. I'm a tiny, obscure living entity. What is my role? I have nothing. Just a tiny, insignificant spiritual spark. And he was very blissful, always thinking like this, actually. So sometimes we see someone who is in great bliss and we think, yeah, I'd like to get some of that. You know, we see the devotees and we see the devotees are actually very happy doing their service. They're chanting, they're dancing, they're taking prasadam, they're preaching, they're engaging in all kinds of activities. And we think, yes, this is attractive, actually. This is very attractive. I'd like to be like them. And so people become attracted to the society of devotees. And why are they blissful? Is it that they're blissful that the devotees are thinking that I'm superior to everyone else? Is it blissful to think that, yes, now I'm a pure devotee and now I'm going back to Godhead? Actually, these are not the way that a devotee actually thinks. A devotee thinks that actually I'm very tiny, very, very insignificant. And hoping always for the mercy of the Lord and hoping for the mercy of the other devotees. Because in this way, he can understand, what is my qualification? What qualification have I got that pleases Krishna? What qualification have I got that pleases my spiritual master? How can I really understand Krishna? How can I even approach Krishna? How can I even stand in front of Krishna? How can I even stand in front of my spiritual master? Better bow down, actually. So Krishna, he's very, very kind to everyone. But the attitude which we display towards Krishna determines the way Krishna responds to us. He explains this in Bhagavad Gita, that ye yathamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamyaham. Each as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So the question comes up here in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, that the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. What does it mean he's equal to everyone? Does it mean he's on the same level as you and me? Does it mean that we're all equal to God? Is this what Srimad Bhagavatam is saying? In order to understand these statements of Bhagavatam, then we have to carefully understand from the very beginning. And even if you look at the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see what is Krishna's position. Krishna's position is janmadyasyataha. He's the supreme absolute truth, that from which everything emanates. Has everything emanated from you? Are you completely forever free of illusion? Are you beyond the limitation of the material modes of nature? So these things have to be taken in context, actually, to understand what equal to everyone means. Equal in quality, yes. We're equal in quality because we're little particles of Krishna, just like a son is equal to his father, in that he's just a representative of his father. But he never thinks that I am my father. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalaya Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namah. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Bachani Nivaseshani Vari Bastya Jade Shadha. But if a father sends his son to go and do some business, then we can understand that the son's business, he's not doing anything other than his father's business. So in that sense, whether you see the father or you see the son, then it's the same thing. Because that's the family business, actually. And we have to know that our business, if we want to become equal with Krishna, if we want to become one with Krishna, in having the same purpose as Krishna, then we have to be clear what is Krishna's purpose. What is Krishna's business? There are some children who may decide, I hate my father. They may decide to go away and become very inimical towards their parents. You know, in my own family, one of my sisters, she decided that she couldn't stand my mother. And so there was some enmity there. But still the parent doesn't give up the affection for the child. But depending on the child's willingness to relate to the parent, there may be different ways in which the parent is able to effectively relate to the child. And so this question comes up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The question has arisen in Parikshit Maharaj's mind, that what is the situation? Because Parikshit Maharaj has become a little doubtful. Of course, he's a devotee. He knows that God is equal. He's equally disposed towards everyone. He's very kindly disposed towards everyone. In Bhagavad Gita, we see Krishna's grave concern for the living entities of this world. He expresses it so clearly. After he's explained everything to Arjuna, he then explains at the end of Bhagavad Gita what is actually Krishna's own burning issue, why he comes here. Actually, it comes out in his hint at the very last words of Bhagavad Gita. That Krishna's concern is for the ignorant condition of the living entities in this world, the children who have left home. And he expresses that someone who explains this confidential secret to the devotees, he's the most dear servant of me. And there's never going to be anyone more dear to me than such a devotee in this world, one who explains the secret of devotional service to the devotees. And Krishna also says most emphatically, there's never going to be anyone dearer to me than he in this whole world. And for him, pure devotional service is guaranteed. And at the end, he'll come back to me. So we can see from this, Krishna's statement is he's feeling extreme concern for the living entities who choose to be separated from Krishna. So what's the difference? In the spiritual world, the devotees are depending on Krishna, but actually Krishna, he's putting himself in the position where he's become dependent on his devotees. He's the darling son, little Krishna. Mother Yasoda is chasing him with a stick because he's becoming naughty and she doesn't want him to be a rascal. And so she wants that my son, he will not grow up to be a thief and a nonsense. So Krishna, he depends on his mother for guidance. He depends on his mother for sustenance. He depends on his mother, Yasoda, even for his food, for his breast milk. So Krishna, he agrees to become dependent on his devotees, on his friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, parents. He depends, he agrees to be dependent on that because the attitude in which the devotees approach him is with great love. But here our attitude is very different. Here our attitude in the material world is one that we don't want to know Krishna. The attitude is that we want to forget Krishna. Does that mean Krishna forgets us? No. It means he makes the entire cosmic situation, the entire arrangement to fulfill all our desires. And he himself disappears into the shadows, in the darkness of our own hearts. And hides himself from our vision because we don't want to see him. And for the enemies of Krishna, when Krishna comes, he personally agrees, all right, you want to approach me as an enemy. All right, well, let's have a fight. And I'll kill you. This is Krishna's business. Because as we've discussed, that Krishna appears because when there are so many rascals in the world who disturb the balance of the situation, then those weeds have to be uprooted, and the pious persons, the proper persons, Maharaj Yudhisthira, the Pandavas, need to be put into proper place. Krishna puts his own men in the right place. So he has to get rid of the demons in order to establish the devotees and the rule of the authorities as the rulers of the earth, and in this way, then the principles of religion can be reestablished on the earth and governed and maintained by those who are Krishna's own men, who are actually responsible to act on the wishes of Krishna, so that the wishes of Krishna can be experienced and carried out for the benefit of the whole society. Krishna makes this whole arrangement so that the whole human society can come to the stage of human life, can come to the stage of consciousness that we're all servants of Krishna and meant to be engaged in the service of the Lord according to the directions of Krishna. So Krishna does all these things. But Maharaj Parikshit, he became bewildered seeing how Krishna was killing so many demons and apparently siding with Indra in the demigods. So this doubt came up in his mind, and in this canto, this section, and this chapter specifically, Sukadeva Goswami is proving to Maharaj Parikshit that Krishna is equal to everyone. And as Prabhupada explains, that here, Sukadeva Goswami, he is going to present so much evidence of Krishna's equality. And it is this inquiry that leads to another incident where Yudhisthira Maharaj also had a similar doubt. He was also asking, how is it that Krishna is apparently so partial towards his devotees and unkind to his enemies? And so in this canto, if you look on the cover, you'll find a picture of Lord Nrisingadev. This is how the topic of the mercy of the Lord towards his devotees and the mercy towards Hiranyakashipu. This topic is beautifully brought out. So we sing these very nice prayers every morning. Tanu Bringam. You see the bringi, the little insect. So this very nice picture here that Jadarani Mataji originally painted of Lord Nrisingadev ripping apart Hiranyakashipu, just like the description is there, with your fingernails you can easily rip apart an insect. So Lord Nrisingadev is doing very nice open heart surgery on King Hiranyakashipu and just ripping him apart like an insect. It's a very nice thing. But he's reciprocating with his devotee. He's particularly kind to his own men, which is natural. Just like a king, he will naturally be protective and concerned about his own people. Krishna is naturally concerned and protective to his own devotees. But actually he's equal to everyone. Samoham sarvabhuteshu. And if we want to approach Krishna as his enemy, then that's fine. If that's the way we want to address him and we want to approach him, Krishna will give us that facility to be his enemy. Krishna will give us the intelligence to be his enemy. And if we want to approach Krishna as his devotee, then Krishna is very pleased. Because after all, our business as devotees is to develop pure devotional service. That's actually the point. Pure devotional service brings one wonderful fruit, and that is Krishna prema, pure love of Krishna. And that pure devotional service means favorable devotional service. So the demons, their service to Krishna, their consciousness of Krishna is unfavorable because they're not interested in pleasing Krishna. They want to attack Krishna. They want to kill Krishna. Just as so many commentaries of Bhagavad Gita are meant for killing off Krishna's personality. That's the fact. Presented by rascals who want to dispose of Krishna's personality from the human psychology. Very, very prevalent. But the devotee's attitude is favorable devotional service, which means with a view to pleasing Krishna. So this is pure devotional service. Our business is to learn how to approach Krishna favorably, how to learn to approach Krishna in such a way that Krishna is pleased. not in such a way that I get my revenge. So this is our business, to act in such a way that we learn what pleases Krishna, to engage in those activities that please Krishna, and to love Krishna. And in this way, come back and live with Krishna. And not, as even Krishna benefits his enemies and packs them off to the impersonal Brahman, where they can vibrate very happily, thinking, now I am God. Now I am one with God. Yes, you can become one with his energy, if this is what you want. Krishna will give us what we want. Why is this whole material world full of so many varieties? Because Krishna is giving us all facility to fulfill our desires and give us what we want. Otherwise, what is the need for so many varieties in the material world? That is the symptom that Krishna's kindness is there. That we desire forgetfulness of Krishna. So Krishna provides a toy replica of the spiritual world, full of varieties that we can play here at being God and independent of Krishna. But the business of the devotee is to awaken Krishna consciousness in the hearts of the sleeping souls. So this is our business. So if we understand what Krishna's business is, and we understand that this is the family business, we should engage in the family business, then we can become very pleasing children of Krishna. And that will make our lives successful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments, please? Yeah.